next item. And perhaps during a break, after the next item, I'll request a break. I think the projector is out of focus because Mayor Delgado and I have tried adjusting our glasses, and it's just fuzzy. So there has to be a way remote control to adjust it.
So the next item is 14. This is the environmental justice update. Item 14 is our annual update to the board on environmental justice activities. In coordination with the State Water Board and other regional boards, the Central Coast Water Board is participating in a statewide effort to increase the water board's understanding of environmental justice issues and improve outreach to the community. Staff member Angela Schroeder will provide a brief update on her efforts, and I actually think that Angela is just going to introduce a member of the EJ community who will actually do the presentation. Angela.
Thanks, Mr. Harris. Some quick comments. Ken mentioned, my name is Angela Schroeder. I am a senior engineering geologist. I manage the groundwater monitoring activities of the Irrigated Lands Regulatory Program. And I'm also the staff assigned to coordinate the environmental justice activities. What you have in front of you is the staff report that summarizes the activities over the course of the last year for environmental justice. Let's see if I can go to the next slide. As you can see, many of our activities assist in our regional implementation with the Human Right to Water Law, which is one of the main priorities for the environmental justice programs of the water boards, and that's consistent with the governor's direction. But most recently, staff coordinated with the Environmental Justice Coalition for Water to provide the opportunity for regional and state board members to participate in an environmental justice tour on February 27th. So at this time, I'd like to introduce Vicente Lara. He's a program manager at the Environmental Justice Coalition for Water, and he will provide us with more details of the environmental justice tour in February.
Is this on? Afternoon, everybody. Afternoon, board members. Again, my name is Vicente Lara. I work for the Environmental Justice Coalition for Water. As Angela mentioned, on February 28th, I think it was, 28th, a number of you joined EJCW staff and community members to do an environmental justice tour. We visited a couple of sites, and I think it was a day worthwhile, I think it was very educational for everybody who participated in that. Briefly, I just want to touch on our current work in the Central Coast. Our executive director is actually headquartered in Sacramento, but we have an office in Salinas. And in that office, we have a few projects going on. First is our safe drinking water program, which we started with a grant from the regional board through the PG&E settlement funds. We've been very successful with that program. We've reached about 30 homes at this point that do have nitrate contamination in their drinking water, and we are currently providing them with an interim drinking water solution, and basically bottled water at this point. Of those 30 homes, we're serving about 150 individuals. We see that as a good first step in terms of trying to address this issue, specifically in Monterey County. Our drinking water program is actually focused on North Monterey County. It's been identified as kind of a hot spot within the county in terms of nitrate contamination. We've also been able to leverage those funds and access some additional funds for interim drinking water through the State Water Board, as well through their Emergency Drinking Water Fund. We're also currently working on the Salinas Valley Disadvantaged Community Integrated Water and Wastewater Plan. I know it's a long title. This is to identify affected communities throughout the Salinas Valley that have water and wastewater issues. We're hoping to work with a handful of these communities to develop some community-driven solutions, develop some concrete plans, and hopefully get them into the IRWIMP planned for the first round of Prop 1 funding. So that's where we're at with that. We've also gotten some funding through the Cal EPA Environmental Justice Small Grant to do some leadership development. One of the issues that we've seen within these communities is that there are individuals who really want to try to advocate on behalf of themselves, of their families, and their community, but there isn't a structure for them to do that collectively. And so we want to try to engage some of our program participants in doing some leadership development so they can join us at forums like this where they can kind of speak on behalf of themselves and their community. So we're going to be rolling that out in the fall as well. And we're also working on the UCLA pilot project that I know you all are aware of. We're working with Madeline Glickfield, who looks like will be contracting EJCW to do some initial outreach with the four sites that they've identified in the Salinas Valley. So just to jump back into the environmental justice tour, we visited three sites. I wanted to take this opportunity. I know, board members, you received a staff report. I kind of wanted to just go through and highlight some of the things that came up at each site, and we're going to start with the San Gerardo site. So I imagine a number of you have met Horacio Amizquite. He's the manager at the San Gerardo Co-op. And when he talks about his story, he always mentions two important facts. The first thing is that many of the community members were exposed to not only nitrates, but trichloropropane in their drinking water for a number of years. And a number of the community members were having health issues. And the county finally brought some public health nurses out, and they identified that this was a widespread issue throughout the community. And at that point, San Gerardo and EJCW and a couple of other partners started to work on trying to bring in a long-term solution. They were able to get some funding, and they do now have an off-site well that is providing drinking water to the community. But the issue that they face now is the issue of affordability. They went from $20 a month in water bills to over $120. And so they're trying to figure out how they're going to, and the reason I highlighted the governance, maintenance, and long-term sustainability issue here is that they're trying to figure out how they're gonna maintain their water system given the issue of affordability. A lot of the residents at the San Gerardo Co-op are retired, they're on fixed income, you know, the price of living keeps going up year after year, and so this is becoming a major issue. One of the reasons they have an affordability issue is because they don't run their own system. The county of Monterey is running their system at this point, and the community has gone back and forth in terms of, do we want to take over the system, or do we want to keep the county running the system? The reason there's hesitation is because if the well gets contaminated again, it will be up to them to solve their problem. And they fear that they won't have the capacity, both with individuals within the community and just financially, to try to fix that problem. So that's an ongoing issue for them. And then the other issue that I wanted to bring up was DAC classification. I'm actually going to skip this for now because I'm going to get into it in the next slide. But this has been something that a lot of folks, including EJCW and a number of our partners, have been bringing up, because the state does use a medium household income average using census data. And currently, San Gerardo sits within a census tract that is not considered disadvantaged. So they had to do their own income survey, and that's been a big challenge for a lot of the communities that we're working with. So the next site we went to was the Las Lomas community. This is actually an unincorporated neighborhood outside of Las Lomas, and we just kind of, we refer to it as the Johnson Road community. Now this is our main site for our drinking water project. PG&E funds are being spent here to provide the drinking water to about 20 families in this community. And they have widespread nitrate contamination in their drinking water. So a couple of big issues that came up. One is that there were many, many residents in this community that were unaware of poor water quality and nitrate contamination in their drinking water. We actually found a number of residents that had been drinking and or using water to cook with for years, if not decades. And we actually had a number of residents who, once we started doing some education around what's going on in this area, they stopped drinking the water and actually started feeling better. Some of their symptoms went away. And I know this was something we debriefed about at the end of the tour, which I'll get to. But yes, so a big part of what we've been doing has been just bringing general awareness and education about nitrate contamination in this area. One of the reasons why there's unawareness around this issue is because a lot of folks in this neighborhood are renters, and they are just assuming that their landlord is taking care of the of water quality issues, and have just never thought to even ask about, you know, where the water is coming from, if it's contaminated, et cetera, et cetera. There are a handful of residents who are homeowners that do have that do understand the issue of nitrate contamination, but they have a sense that there's really no options for them, right? They don't have the resources to deal with this widespread issue, right? We have one guy who already drilled one well. He doesn't have the resources to drill another well. And that well that he drilled, when they first tested it, was fine. But with the drought and just over time, it's above the MCL by twice as much. You know, it's at like 100 parts per million. And so he can't drink his water, and he doesn't have the resources to drill a second well. Actually, it'd be the third well. Well, so there's a lot of folks that don't feel like they have an option. Again, we run into this issue about the DAC classification. This neighborhood that we're serving, even though 90% of our participants self-report that they're either migrant and or agricultural workers, this community sits, again, in a census tract that DWR in the state does not recognize as a disadvantaged community. And the reason is because this is a mixed income area. There are some you know, well-off folks living nearby. So one of the issues that we've been trying to figure out is how do we classify a community in a way that does recognize their need? Because I know we all understand that being considered a DAC does give you access to more resources to try to fix the issue. So that's really key. I already kind of mentioned the issue between renters versus owners. Owners are a big important stakeholder group that we've been engaging with. We're also trying to figure out how can tenants and renters engage each other and support each other. And there's actually a lot of fear from tenants. We even had tenants who didn't even want to take our program, our service, because they were fearful that even taking bottled water would result in them being evicted from their unit or whatnot. You know, so there's a lot of issues between that dynamic, renters versus owners. But I think one of the key questions that one of our community members asked is, when will we get clean water? And unfortunately, as EJCW, you know, we don't have a clear answer for them, but I think it's a really, really important answer that we need to keep on our radar. So after Las Lomas, we wrapped up. The Community Foundation was generous. The Community Foundation of Monterey County was generous enough to provide us a space to debrief. And we'll go to the next slide. There was a lot that we debriefed about, but there was just a couple of things that I think I wanted to point out. One, I'll leave this. I know there were some questions about the role UC Hastings is playing within our program. I'll leave that to the Q&A section of this presentation. But generally speaking, we see UC Hastings and law students playing a role in a long-term solution by allowing us to legally form entities that could represent these communities. That's kind of where we see the UC Hastings collaboration supporting us. And they're really interested in possibly working with the Johnson Road community and trying to see what kind of organization, legal entity, could represent that community and their needs. Again, one of the issues that we're interested in exploring is how can we connect with local healthcare providers in bringing up their own awareness and their own knowledge around issues of nitrate contamination, water quality issues, and the health effects it may have on their patients. So we're actually hoping, I wanted to thank the board for providing us with additional funding from the PG&E settlement funds, and we hope to use that funding to do some of this work, where we're actually going to some of the local FQHCs, the local federally qualified health centers, and talking to the providers there about this issue, and letting them know that they may be seeing patients that are having symptoms due to drinking or being exposed to water quality issues like nitrate contamination. And speaking to our partners and even our drinking water participants, there just seems to be a sense of not enough support from local and county government and elected officials. Again, we've had some EJCW partners in Monterey County that have gone to, you know, their county supervisors and whatnot, and feel that they've just kind of hit a brick wall with those options and with those channels. And I think part of the issue is that a lot of the problems that we're seeing can't necessarily be solved with just pipes in the ground. These aren't necessarily just engineering solutions. We also need to figure out how we can build that human capital, that leadership in these communities, because it's one thing to be able to build a water system that is providing drinking water. It's another issue to have folks in those communities maintain and sustain those systems. As we've seen with the San Gerardo example, we don't want to put communities in a position where they have these systems that they just can't sustain, that they're just too taxing on their community. So it's a really, really complicated problem, but we feel like that we're making some really good gains with the relationships that we built at this point. I think I have a minute left. just briefly, some recommendations that I just wanted to throw out there. I know there's an EJ task force that the Water Board has convened. I think our only recommendation would be just to maybe formalize either a resolution or whatnot to direct regional board staff to address EJ issues in the Central Coast, specifically looking at small water systems and domestic wells. What we've seen so far is that those are the systems that are the hardest hit with this issue. And really look at kind of the long-term solution planning. There needs to, we need that support, because that long-term planning is going to take quite a while to really roll out and to do right. And we definitely want to look at the local and regional solutions. The other thing that we need support with is really looking at low-cost, low-maintenance interim solutions. We want to work with our communities to figure out what kind of interim solution makes the most sense for them. At this point, though, it really just comes down to being able to provide bottled water. POUs, there's a lot of pushback from the county from using POUs, point of use devices. Point of entry devices are just way too expensive. We just don't have the budget to do that kind of stuff. Other options, we run into some permitting issues, things like that. So really looking at what kind of other low-cost, low-tech, low-maintenance interim solutions can we provide other than just bottled water? Because bottled water, I think for a lot of folks, really, really just seems interim. It really just seems temporary, and they know that it's going to go away. We'd also recommend an annual workshop to address these issues that the board convenes. We would love to do a Thirsty for Justice screening with the board members. I know that's been an idea that's been thrown out there. And we've also, with this new additional funding through the PG&E Settlement Fund, we want to just invite the board members, for those who didn't attend, to come on a second EJ tour, and we're proposing sometime in August. So that wraps it up.
Go ahead, let you finish.
That was it.
Oh, okay.
So if there's interest in an additional EJ tour, we're glad to work with the regional board staff to try to set that up. I think we're looking at possibly the last week of August would work the best for us.
Yeah, I understand there is interest both actually at the state board level of having some state board members to participate, and some of us, including myself, was unable to attend, and I certainly heard a lot of positive comments from my colleagues, and I would certainly like to participate. Couple of thoughts that come to mind quickly. One of them, I think we need to increasingly leverage the fact that the Drinking Water Division is part of a state water board now, because it's logical. It's Drinking Water Division is about drinking water. So we need to engage that part of our agency a lot more. Another point, I think, when you talk about the cost, the biggest cost of water is energy.
Yeah.
Right? So, and I shared that thought, I think, with Dr. Hunter. Talk about the PG&E Settlement Fund. Well, You know, one possible approach that would be feasible, particularly with small systems, mm-hmm. is to engage PG&E through some of their green grant program with solar-powered yeah. Pumps, because during nighttime, solar panels don't work very well, but that's not when you use a lot of water. So if you have a right, you know, tank capacity, you know, you would have at least that supplement. And so the energy cost by itself could be significantly reduced. And PG&E does have quite a few grants mm-hmm. available, monies that comes actually from the California Public Utility Commission that would be available. So maybe just food for thought is a pilot project.
Yeah.
And see how successful that pilot project could be, and then basically build on that as sort of a blueprint in other locations.
Yeah, if I may. One of the issues that we began to ask about was PG&E bills, because initially when we thought about affordability, we were thinking about how much are they paying either in their water bill or how much they were paying to go get water. But we realized that some residents are paying $200 to $300 a month in PG&E bills because it's a small pump that's pumping their water. Another issue that we didn't realize is when the power goes out, for a lot of these folks, their water goes out as well. So mm-hmm. you know, there's a connection between PG&E and electricity and water for sure.
Yes, please.
Question, and it just occurred to me as you were speaking, and at the tour I asked quite a few questions, so I have one more good one
sure.
for you. To make the statement, and just for clarity, because I'm not sure if it was stated, that the Los Lomas residents are on individual wells, not a water system.
Yeah.
Okay. Secondly, on the San Gerardo water system, if they're only paying $120 means dollars means different things to different people. However, the county, I think, spent over $1 to $2 million on that water system, and the well itself is more than a mile away.
Yeah.
So with that distance, has there been any thought to talking to the health services departments, whether county or state, to see if there are any other residential areas mm-hmm. that could go on that system to diminish the cost for operating that well in the pipeline? Just food for thought.
Yeah. You know, again, I definitely don't want to speak for San Gerardo, but just from my experience being out there and getting to know the area, it's pretty rural. So I don't know if there is a big enough nearby community that would be able to hook in. It might just be individual.
There is one, and I think in the early years, San Gerardo asked them if they could go on their on their waters, and they said no. But maybe now, with the circumstances with drought, the age of their well, maybe that might be something not to forget for the present and the future.
Yeah, economies of scale are a huge deal. If you don't have the ratepayer base, it's really hard to maintain it. Yeah.
Dr. Hunter?
Thank you, Vicente. It's very nice to see you here today, and I really appreciate the effort that went into organizing the tour, because as you showed photos there, we were actually seated and in one gentleman's home, and then had some of his neighbors join, and that's mm-hmm. the Los Lomas area. And I don't know if you were here earlier when Mr. Moore gave his report, and we learned that Los Lomas has received some funding out of state bond money, water bond money. I'm not clear what that is for right at the moment, but it's news, and I wanted mm-hmm. to share that with you. So I think there is a spotlight, there is a magnifying glass, every way we can possibly bring the little that we know, because this has been kind of coming out of a situation where these wells were not regulated as municipal wells are.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the Drinking Water Division and the transition over to State Water Board is one of those big outcomes of the recognition that this is left roughly 2%, I think, of our population statewide unprotected. So no monitoring, no information, and the assumption, as you point out, that the water is safe. One of the things that you are taking action on, I really want to encourage you and support in any way I can. There's not enough education and outreach in any facet of this. All the stakeholders have a deficit of understanding of, you know, the magnitude of the problem as well as the remedies available, and the interim solutions are where we are all focused right now, because that's the deal. People are drinking contaminated water, has to stop the moment we know. But going to the public health clinics has been something that I have really advocated for so long, because I feel that there are other, now you're expanding the pots of money that can be hopefully pooled to be able to bring more resources and more information, more knowledge, get the information into the schools. Mm-hmm. Because once public health gets involved, once the health and the medical system gets involved, then they may be able to also build on, and we know, you know, the McDonald's motto, get the kids, get the parents, you know, that we really need to look at all the public institutions and the networks in which they operate. And I know your background allows you to kind of move fluidly between mm-hmm. these different kind of segmented aspects of our community life. And so this is outstanding, because that has been a big gap. And it's not something that we can do, however, it's something we can support by providing data that shows the hard facts. And so we, you know, I know we're committed to doing that. And so I want to thank EJCW for taking this leadership role in helping to get things moving at a better pace. We've had small, you know, community concerns coming forward at a slow drip, drip, drip. Sorry about that. I'm horrible at puns without intending to. But yeah, I know I am. I am worse. But the point is, I think there's several number of staff now that are dedicated to working on different aspects of this. So I hope in that partnership and in collaboration, mm-hmm. You are going to keep us informed of EJCW's work, and I know staff is working on a regular way with these efforts through various programs. And I wanted to thank staff for creating this table that helped us to see the different ways in which our tools and resources touch on this issue, and where we might be seeing these solutions advancing, you know, and maybe coming from different corners. So hopefully, you know, it may seem slow, but I really feel so much more encouraged than when we first became cognizant of just how deep the problem is in our region. It's mm-hmm. not true in others so much as it is here and in the Central Valley. So I will look forward to continuing to grow this dialogue. I really appreciate your suggestion for the annual workshop. I think that's something we have been considering and looking forward to a way to support that and make that happen. And the Thirsty for Justice screening, unfortunately, I've missed. I think there have been three different opportunities, which I was not, it was not possible for me, and I know new board members also, you know, we can begin that planning process again. Sure. So thank you for making this trip, and I know you speak for many people, so that's a big job, and Mr. Moore is here, and he had a chance to contribute to the dialogue on the tour, and I'm looking forward to other State Water Board members who we know about also, they're very concerned and have put their money into these situations to the extent possible. So thank you again.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Hunter. Mr. Johnson.
Thank you. Good presentation, Vicente. I just want to pile on to a couple of things. The first, taking advantage of Mr. Moore being here, You know, the State Board, I believe in cooperation with a couple of other agencies, has developed this this tool to identify disadvantaged communities. And it's really important to be able to do that. We're really working to direct money to those communities. And the tool measures all sorts of different things, including numbers of people that go to the hospital for asthma, mm-hmm. and income levels, and but it's all based on zip codes, as you pointed out. And zip codes in dense population areas in Los Angeles, in San Jose, and San Francisco are fairly geographically small. And you know, when I was first introduced to this tool at the Water Quality Coordinating Committee last year, of course, my first instinct was to look up Watsonville, where I live. And I was pretty surprised that it did not show as a disadvantaged community. And the disadvantaged community, I believe, is like the zip codes that score in the bottom, I forget if it's 5 or 10% on this index. And I mean, I was pretty surprised. And when I started looking at it, you know, income, looking at 2012 income, if you look at Watsonville, Santa Cruz metropolitan area, it's 52,000 per capita. California is 45,000, Watsonville 17,000. Watsonville's an overwhelmingly farm worker town.
Mm-hmm.
But Watsonville has, first of all, it has clean air, it's on the coast, so that kind of bumps up its score. But secondly, it is a city of population 51,000, I'm looking at 2010 numbers, and in a zip code that has a population of 82,000. And it's relatively, as soon as you go outside of the city, it's relatively affluent.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. it's just, it's really problematic, and that's even more true when you go look at these smaller communities in the Salinas Valley that are aggregated into zip codes that cover, you know, often scores or hundreds of square miles. And, you know, it doesn't seem like an efficient solution to require the communities to do income surveys, which is the current way for a lot of these grants to qualify. It doesn't even seem like an efficient solution to set up a technical assistance program where we'll come up with money for somebody to go do income studies. It seems like there must be a way to take this and put it at the census tract level. That income data is available at the census tract level. You know, some stuff might have to be aggregated at the zip code level and then translated to the census tract level, but I just think we could get a tool, given the level of rural poverty in California, I think that's just really important. I mean, it's not so important in Los Angeles, but it's really important in the Central Valley and the Salinas Valley and the Pajaro Valley, the Santa Maria Valley. The second thing I wanted to, and I just think, you know, that's a gatekeeper for the money, you know? I mean, that's huge, and it's doable. I know what's involved in getting somebody to do some reprogramming too, because we've had those issues. It's not a small thing. But the second thing I wanted to pile on to is it's a long term thing, not an interim thing. Is the structural question of and you know, we tried to do this in the Governor's Drinking Water Stakeholders Committee, and it almost made it out the gate, and then it was pretty much opposed by Aqua, sort of representing the big water systems that thought it was a gateway to a statewide water tax to support disadvantaged communities. But at some point, I think that there needs to be a push to experiment with, maybe in the Salinas Valley, maybe in the Tulare Lake Basin, with a some sort of structure that can provide some services and some representation to these small disadvantaged community, often small water systems. Whether that's representation in the IRWIMPs, which are typically dominated by the big players that have their agendas and have their mm-hmm. projects already lined out, or whether it's being able to provide circuit rider water system operators, or whether it's being able to provide wholesale instead of retail prices to get wells drilled, or whether it's being able to provide billing services or virtual consolidation of water districts where you can't make the pipes touch. And Steve is rubbing his fingers It's true. There is a, you know, there is money. It does cost money. And I think that the only way, so many of these are in the rural areas, are small water systems. I think that the only way that they meaningfully interact with the big systems, that they can actually have some economies of scale, is to find some sort of a way to give them an overarching structure. And, you know, I just think that idea needs to be revisited.
Thank you, Mayor Delgado. So thank you very much for your presentation.
Thank you.
And Angela. Additional comments?
That's it.
Reflections?
I will forward some dates to Mr. Harris for those of you who might be interested in attending that second environmental justice tour in late August. So we'll work with Vicente and appreciate his offer to, it's not insignificant to coordinate that effort. So we appreciate that opportunity.
Thank you. So, you know, clearly every one of us, I think, can see we're, you know, fully engaged and committed. This is going to be an ongoing project, and you know, I know we're in the good hands of Angela and Dr. Hunter, you know, representing the EJ program as requested by the State Water Board as one of our key priorities. So thank you again.